Dana Balampa Kiri Bara Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranda Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranda Yamuna Tiravana Jamuna Teravana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Uba Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Gopi Janavala Bhagini Badhari Gopi Jana Balapa Giri Badadhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Janarandana Yashoda Nandana Braja Janarandana Jamuna Tiravana Chari Vana Chari Jamuna Tiravana Chari Vana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Dava Kunjabi Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Radha Sivasadi Gora Bhakta Vrinda Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Radha Sivasadi Gora Bhakta Vrinda Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Rama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna,
Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama
Paramahamsa Parivrajika Charya Ashto Tarasara Shishimad Srila Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vindiki Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Premsekha Ho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sedvaita Gadadhara Siva Sari Gora Bhakta Vindiki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopinath Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki, Sri Mayapur Navadvip Dham Ki, Sri Purushottam Chetra Ki, Sri Ganga Maya Ki Jai, Sri Jumuna Maya Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Tulsi Devi Maharani Ki Jai, Harinam Sankirtane Ki Jai, Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Nitai Gora Premanandi. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Withdrawal of the Cosmic Creations, Chapter 2, The Elephant Gajendra's Crisis. The second, third, and fourth chapters of this canto describe how the Lord, during the reign of the fourth Manu, gave protection to the king of the elephants. as described in this second chapter, when the king of the elephants, along with his female elephants, was enjoying in the water, a crocodile suddenly attacked him. And the elephant surrendered to the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead for protection. In the midst of the ocean of milk, there is a very high and beautiful mountain that has an altitude of 10,000 yojanas, or 80,000 miles. This mountain is known as Trikuta. In a valley of Trikuta, there is a nice garden named Ritumat, which was constructed by Varuna. And in that area, there is a very nice lake. Once the chief of the elephants, along with female elephants, went to enjoy bathing in that lake. And they disturbed the inhabitants of the water. Because of this, the chief crocodile in that water, who was very powerful, immediately attacked the elephant's leg. Thus, there ensued a great fight between the elephant and the crocodile. This fight continued for 1,000 years. Neither the elephant nor the crocodile died. But since they were in the water, the elephant gradually became weak, whereas the power of the crocodile increased more and more. Thus, the crocodile became more and more encouraged. Then the elephant, being helpless and seeing that there was no other way for his protection, sought shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Text number one. Sri Suka Uvacha. Asid Giri Baro Rajam. Trikuta iti vishrutaha. Chiro dena vrita shriman. Yojana yuta mutshritaha. Sri suku uvacha. Asid giri varo rajam. Trikuta iti vishrutaha. Chiro dena vrita shriman. Yojana yuta mutritaha. Sri suka uvacha. Asid giri varo rajam. Trikuta iti vishrutaha. Chiro dana vrita shriman. Yojana yuta mutshritaha. Sri suka uvacha. Asid giri varo rajam. Trikuta iti vishrutaha. Chiro dena vrita shriman. Yojana yuta mutritaha. Sri sukuru vacha. Asid giri varo rajam. Trikuta iti vishrutaha. Chiro dena vrita shriman. Yojana Yutamu Chitaha. Ladies? Sri Shukaru Vacha. Asid Girivaro Rajam. Trikuta iti Vishutaha. Chiro Ninavrita Sriman. Yojana Yutamuchita. Sri Sukuru Vacha. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, Asit, there was Girivaraha, a very big mountain. Rajam, O king, Trikutaha, Trikuta, iti, thus, Vishrutaha, celebrated Chira Udena by the ocean of milk, Abritaha, surrounded Sriman, very beautiful Yojana, a measurement of 8 miles, Ayutam, 10,000, Uchritaha, very high. Sukadev Goswami said, my dear king, there is a very large mountain called Trikuta. It is 10,000 yojanas, 80,000 miles high. Being surrounded by the ocean of milk, it is very beautifully situated. Tavata vistrita paryak tribi shringai payonidam. Nidim, Tisha kam rochayan ashte ropyayasa hiranmayai anyaischa kakubha sarva ratnatatu vichitritai nanadruma lota galmair nirgoshair nijharam basham. The length and breadth of the mountain are of the same measurement, 80,000 miles. Its three principal peaks, which are made of iron, silver and gold, beautify all directions and the sky. The mountain also has other peaks, which are full of jewels and minerals and are decorated with nice trees, creepers and shrubs. The sounds of the waterfalls on the mountain create a pleasing vibration. In this way, the mountain stands, increasing the beauty of all directions. Sachavanitya mana manangri samantatpaya urmibhi karoti syamalambu mim harin marakatash shrinabhi. The ground at the foot of the mountain is always washed by waves of milk that produce emeralds all around in the 8 directions, north, south, east, west, and the directions midway between them. Purport. From Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that there are various oceans. Somewhere, there is an ocean filled with milk. Somewhere, an ocean of liquor, an ocean of ghee, an ocean of oil, and an ocean of sweet water. Thus, there are different varieties of oceans within this universe. The modern scientists who have only limited experience cannot defy these statements. They cannot give us full information about any planet, even the planet on which we live. From this verse, however, we can understand that if the valleys of some mountains are washed with milk, this produces emeralds. No one has the ability to imitate the activities of material nature as conducted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Let's read on, shall we? Siddhacharana Gandharvair Vidyadhara Mahoragai Kinarair Apsarobhischa Kridad Bhiyajushtakandaraha. The inhabitants of the higher planets, the Siddhas, Charanas, Gandharvas, Vidyadharas, serpents, Kinaras and Apsaras go to that mountain to sport. Thus all the caves of the mountain are full of these denizens of the heavenly planets. It's like a resort for the demigods. Purport, as ordinary men may play in the salty ocean, the inhabitants of the higher planetary systems go to the ocean of milk. They float in the ocean of milk and also enjoy various sports within the caves of Trikuta Mountain. We should ask Gora Travel for some tickets, huh? Text 6. Yatra Sangita Sanadair Nadad Guham Amashaya Abhigar Janti Harayaha Shlagina Para Sankaya. Because of the resounding vibrations of the denizens of heaven singing in the caves, the lions there, being very proud of their strength, roar with unbearable envy, thinking that another lion is roaring in that way. Purport. In the higher planetary systems, there are not only different types of human beings, but also animals like lions and elephants. There are trees, and the land is made of emeralds. Such is the creation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has sung in this regard, Keshava, tuya jagata vichitra. My Lord Keshava, your creation is colourful and full of varieties. Geologists, botanists and other so-called scientists speculate about other planetary systems, but being unable to estimate the varieties on other planets, they falsely imagine that all planets but this one are vacant, uninhabited and full of dust. Although they cannot even estimate the varieties existing throughout the universe, they are very proud of their knowledge and they are accepted as learned by persons of a similar caliber. As described in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 3, Text 19, Svavid Vara Hostra Karai Samstuta Purusha Pashu. Materialistic leaders are praised by dogs, hogs, camels and asses, and they themselves are also big animals. One should not be satisfied with the knowledge imparted by a big animal. One must take knowledge from a perfect person like Sukadev Goswami. Mahajana Jena Gatasa Panta. Our duty is to follow the instructions of the Mahajanas. There are 12 Mahajanas, and Sukadeva Goswami is one of them. Swayambhur, Narada, Sambhu, Kumara, Kapilo, Manu, Pralado, Janako, Bhishmo, Balir, Vyasakir, Vayam. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 3, Text 20. Vyasaki is Sukadeva Goswami. Whatever he says, we consider to be factual. That is perfect knowledge. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahiyam Tadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinataninam. So we have a challenge to of acceptance, a challenge of acceptance. Do we accept the information, the knowledge, the stories of the Srimad Bhagavatam as factual? Or do we accept the statements of, or the information that's provided by, as Prabhupada says here, so-called scholars, so-called learned men? What's the answer? Bhagavatam. Yes. Despite the fact that the Bhagavatam is challenging. Who ever heard of an ocean of milk? Who ever heard of an ocean of liquor? Well, we have. Huh? It's in the Bhagavatam. But the mundane men, those with a very poor, well, a poor fund of knowledge, basically because their knowledge is determined by their sensual perception, right? Which, as explained by the those who can see, transcendentalists who see with a different vision. The vision of a transcendentalist is to see through the prism or through the perspective of the Shastra. So that's their vision. And it's much broader, it's much more expansive than that vision which is constrained by sensual perception. We know that our eyes are limited. Right? We're not able to see very much, actually, with our eyes, which are but just basically material machines, material mechanical devices. And they have their limitations. Of course, they're extremely valuable, extremely powerful in many respects. I discovered vision is quite an interesting and valuable commodity, you know, capacity, right, to be able to see, especially when you can't see. then you realize, whoa, what's going on here? And one of my specialists told me, you know, 80% or good percentage of the brain's function is just processing visual information. Huh? In fact, you know, we have a saying, seeing is believing. Right? Seeing is believing. But actually that's false. Because even though seeing is powerful and gives us an opportunity to manage and to experience and to measure what's going on within the creation, it's still actually very, very limited. Very limited. Yet, those who depend on their material sensual powers will deny topics of the Bhagavatam because they've not seen them or experienced them themselves. Right? Can't be because I haven't seen it. Right? But in reality, just because you haven't seen something doesn't mean that it can't exist. Right? Within our limited experience, is what Prabhupada would say to, even here in the temple room here, one of the devotees asked Prabhupada about eagles flying in the sky and laying eggs that would hatch as they fell through the... And Prabhupada said to the devotee, he said, who are you? You know, you're still wet behind the ears. In other words, you're just a baby. What do you know about what's being explained? You know, it's challenging. Bhagavatam is actually very challenging when you think about it. From our material perspective, we're exposed to an amazing realm, universes of experience, far beyond what we see, what we experience with our limited sensual apparatus, the body. And it's true. Even the materialists acknowledge or understand the human form is the most advanced. Of all of the animals, of all of the living entities, the human form is the most advanced. Has the greatest intellectual and mental capacity. Has, you know, the adaptive, creative intellect to fashion tools and, you know, so many things. iPads, right? Mobile phones. We think we're very advanced. Now, electric motor cars. But actually, the feature set of the human being is limited by that, by its own apparatus, by the senses. It's limited. And so when we hear, and of course Prabhupada explains, the hearing capacity of the human is the most powerful of its sensual apparatus, hearing, because we're able to hear from conversations like those shared by Sukadeva Goswami and by the sages at Namisharanya, Sutta Goswami, and the sages hearing the repetition of basically what Sukadeva Goswami was saying. And through that hearing process, we're able to experience realms beyond our experience. You know, and here, this amazing place where we would all like to go, the playground of the demigods. Right? Where the shore of the ocean is just made up of emeralds. Right? When we go to the ocean, you know, we go on holidays to the Gold Coast, right? And what do we? We just get some sand. Although sand is valuable, by the way. Sand is valuable to build houses and so forth. It's an expensive commodity in some places around the world because even that's, you know, disappearing or it's been used up to build houses. So this is challenging. It's hugely challenging, especially for the materialistic mindset, which thinks, you know, our sensual perception is all there is to understand the realm in which we live. Although even they know that's not the case. Just like we see these helicopters. What is it? Apache helicopter, right? And the pilot puts on a helmet, right? And with that helmet and with the apparatus that's provided, they can fly at night and see everything, right? And even when they move their heads, the cannon moves, right? And then he can press a button and this is high level, you know, this is advancement of the human form of life, right? And really, what is it? Ahara, nidra, baya, maitanam, chats, eating, sleeping, mating and defending. So that's what the animals do. So the human beings are no better than the animals, right? Which is why Prabhupada, you know, quotes this verse here. Svavid vara hostra karai samstuta purusha pasu. Right? These are just hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. Yeah? Bhagavatam is very blunt in its assessment of the materialists, right? You know, better than hogs, dogs, camels and asses. Although my advice is don't tell them that, okay? I've told the story before. I told my brother when I first became a devotee and I was just started chanting 16 rounds for a few weeks. And I told my brother, if you don't chant 16 rounds, you're going to become a hog, dog, camel and ass. He wasn't impressed. But I knew. And you know, this is the Bhagavatam is challenging. It's very challenging for the materialists. Even challenging for the devotees. Because, you know, here we've got a story where the demigods are living on a mountain that's 80,000 miles wide. Is that bigger than the planet that we're living on? Is it? It's bigger than the Earth planet. 80,000 miles high, 80,000 miles wide. Where is it? Well, it's on the shore of the Milk Ocean. Of course. Right? Really challenging. Yet we place all of our faith and all of our belief, if you like, in the what's being presented in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Yes, it is challenging from the material perspective. It reveals information, it reveals experiences beyond what we're limited by with our material senses and by our understanding of what a planet looks like. And what we only have a planet, at least we can appreciate oceans, right? We accept oceans. But what's our ocean? It's salty, salt water. Right? And when we hear of an ocean of milk, then we're thinking, whoa, that's a big cow. Right? Well, at least I think, where did it come from? Right? Where did it come from? And is it almond milk or is it... what kind of milk? Huh? So there, it is challenging, there's no doubt about it. That these, and, you know, here we have a story about a crocodile and an elephant fighting, right? And the elephant talks. Huh? In fact, the elephant is a devotee. This is why the Bhagavatam tells stories about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees. And by studying the Bhagavatam, not only are we exposed to all of this broader experience of realms, of planets, of universes even, that are beyond our experience. The spiritual world, for a start, right? Which can't be measured by material senses. Or even the presence of the soul, right? The Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita teach us that the soul is present within the heart. But if you did an exploration with if the surgeon opens up the heart, it doesn't see anything there. Huh? Just, right? Well, hopefully, right? But you're alive, right? So, from a material perspective, much of the information that's contained within the Bhagavatam can't be referred to as a proof of the truth. Huh? Yet, And especially for materialistic, Prabhupada's making the point here that from a materialistic perspective, the information that we learn from the purely material perspective is just the learning of animals. And focused on animalistic behavior, animalistic activities. Whereas the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita and the other bhakti shastras focus on elevating one's consciousness above the material plane and appreciating that above the material plane, there is another realm of existence. We were discussing this the other day. Ramananda Roy was talking with Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya was asking him, what's the most important knowledge? What is learning? And Ramananda Roy explained the four levels of learning. And of course, the first is material knowledge. And it's not that we don't discount material learning. How many of you here are graduates? Please raise your hands. Yeah, okay. So we value learning, right? Or your parents did, right? And you too, because with that qualification, what have you got? What have you got? A job. Joy, that's really good. But it means, you know, it means, like, my father was the first in his family to earn a degree. And it was a big thing. It was a big thing for my parents to earn that qualification. Two things that my father was disappointed with me, one of them was I didn't get a degree. The other one was he wanted to know why he wasn't invited to our wedding. And that's when Hare Krishnas were antisocial, right? We didn't care too much about families and that other Maya. They're all hogs, dogs, camels and asses. But of course, if we treat people like hogs, dogs, camels and asses, they are not going to like us. So invite your parents to your wedding. They'll at least think you're normal. Now, in order to access this learning, because above material learning is the knowledge of Brahman, that there is something spiritual, something non-material above the material creation, right? The Brahman. And which Prabhupada says is a type of negative knowledge, negative, because it's not part of the material world. That's its confirmation or affirmation, right? But difficult to understand, very difficult to understand an energy or a power that's within everything, influences everything, controls everything, but is not material. An interesting concept, right? This is the Brahman. That's higher than material learning. Then, third learning is devotional service to Lord Vishnu. Right? Bhakti to Lord Vishnu. And higher still is bhakti or devotional service that's focused on Krishna. Right? And the differentiation, we discussed this the other day, the differentiation is that usually those, and we see it, people who come to the temple, they are praying to God, please help me. Right? Gimme, gimme, gimme. Right? You are God, I am your servant, look after me. Right? Or maybe not even, you know, maybe not even a servant, because that's quite elevated. That's what one learns from bhakti or devotional service to Krishna, because that mood of devotion or that mood of that relationship is one of service to God. The devotion to Narayan, Lakshmi Narayan, is usually, you know, I'm a pious man or woman and please reward me for my piety. Right? Whereas the devotee prays to Krishna, I don't care for Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundarim, Kavitamva, Jagadisha, Kamaye. I don't have any desire other than I want to serve you, Krishna. It's quite elevated, right? No personal consideration. Not interested in wealth or followers or beautiful friends, right? It's a mood of intimacy that one can experience in relationship with God that's considered to be the highest of all learning. And of course, that's what the Bhagavatam takes us to, right? And it's interesting, isn't it? Because Gajendra, when he's brought to his knees, I guess, right? What does he do? He prays to the Lord. So, in one sense, Gajendra's in the third category, right? Because he's... And it's not bad. It's not a bad thing. It's actually very elevated. Very elevated that somebody is brought to their knees, let's say, right? And then prays to the Lord, please protect me. Please look after me. Right? Even the devotees who don't want anything pray to the Lord for protection. Right? This is quite a natural. But of course they feel, whether I have anything or whether I don't have anything, it doesn't matter. Krishna, if I can just be your servant, then I'll be happy. Right? This is the most greatly elevated mood of surrender, of prapanam, surrender to Krishna. So, Prabhupada's making the point here that the Bhagavatam may challenge us, will challenge us actually, and will be criticized even by the materialists, the hogs, dogs, camels and asses, who will deny it because you can't see it, you can't experience it. You can't measure it. It's immeasurable. It's achincha, inconceivable even. Some of what we're, you know, this notion of an 80,000 mile mountain, right? On the shore of a milk ocean. Who could think of this stuff? That's like, whoa, that's pretty far out, right? Although it's very interesting because, you know, the Bhagavatam has its own internal logic. It's not illogical or irrational, right? It's quite logical. It's just we just couldn't imagine of these things, and neither have we experienced them. And so this is kind of the argument. Oh, where is this place? Right? Where is it? It's all just nonsense, right? All just made up. But no, the devotees accept, and of course, within that internal logic, there's the practice and the process of bhakti. Right? Shravanadi sudachite karaye udoy. The natural Krishna prema that exists within the heart of everybody arises spontaneously when one hears the Bhagavatam. And what does the Bhagavatam tell us? The Bhagavatam tells us, first of all, if you want to begin this process, chant. Huh? A lot of our confirmation of what's in the pages of the Bhagavatam is realized through the simple act of chanting Hare Krishna. Right? It's very interesting. We accept what the Bhagavatam says because the Bhagavatam says chant Hare Krishna. Right? This is Hare Krishna philosophy at the kernel, right? At its essence. And what is it? Doesn't matter what happens, or whether you're successful or not, whatever you are, the message is what? Chant Hare Krishna. Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nascheva, Nascheva, Gatiran Yata. Right? And this is Lord Chaitanya's instruction, right? Even Lord Chaitanya explains to the devotees, my spiritual master told me that I was a fool. And that if I wanted to perfect my life, then I'd chant Hare Krishna. And that's what the Bhagavatam tells us. We're purified. Our consciousness, auspiciousness is created simply by hearing the messages of the Bhagavatam. And the Bhagavatam, it tells us, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam, right? We engage in those activities that are recommended by the Bhagavatam, and we experience we get the result, we get the taste, right? Param drishtva nirvartate. We're bombarded by sensual persuasion, especially in the Kali Yuga, the materialistic society and the culture is all designed to trap us through with the senses. Bhagavatam warns us you can't trust the senses. The senses are dangerous. Huh? They need to be controlled. And the culture of the Bhagavatam is not sense gratification but sense control. And we begin that sense control by chanting. Actually, it's we need to have sensual control when we're chanting. It's very interesting. Process of bhakti is. It's the means and the end. Quite interesting. So, Bhagavatam tells us, start the process of bhakti by chanting. And then there are ways, six items that are recommended for effective chanting. And the first one is mana samharanam, control the mind. Control the mind. The Bhagavatam teaches us that if you want to control the mind, then you need to approach a guru. This is how we control the mind. By approaching a spiritual master and then following the instructions of the spiritual master. And of course, within our spiritual culture, all of this is exemplified in the pages of the Bhagavatam. We get to see the activities and the examples of so many devotees. Even if they happen to be in the milk ocean, right? Because here Gajendra and the crocodile are in the milk ocean. Right? It's where this is taking place. Does that picture of Gajendra actually show him in the milk ocean? I wonder. Oh, he's in the lake on the mountain. Yeah, that's right. Yes, you're correct. So, our test of the Bhagavatam is in, you know, they say the proof is in the pudding. Right? The proof is in the pudding. And our pudding is the chanting of Hare Krishna. Actually, the pudding is breakfast, which is in a few minutes' time. But the nectar for which we're always anxious, especially in the Bhagavatam class. But actually, we get that mana shastan indriyani, where the living entity is struggling with the mind and the senses and pulling and pushing. And you know, in the Kali Yuga, the modern materialistic culture is designed to take advantage of the fact that people don't have their mind and their senses under control. So we think, you know, we can only be happy if we've got the latest car or the latest phone or the latest watch or whatever. Or we're wearing certain style of clothing, eating certain types of food. But the Bhagavatam gives us a whole environment, a whole sensual engagement by ultimately rendering service to Krishna. But how do we do that? Through the agent, through serving Krishna's representative, the spiritual master. And especially within our culture, the spiritual master is an expert in chanting, right? In chanting Hare Krishna. And then when we follow the instructions of the spiritual master in chanting, we're able to then, following that advice, and especially for us, the advice that's given by Rupa Goswami, why Srila Prabhupada translated the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the nectar of devotion, and also why Prabhupada translated the nectar of instruction, because within that literature are the activities which, when engaged in, control the mind and the senses, right? And of course, the chanting of Hare Krishna is the basis of all of that. And when we chant, that's when we start to realize who we are and what our relationship is with the creation. What is our relationship with God? And what's our relationship with the material universe? And how we should act in that relationship. And then through those activities, then we start to realize our spiritual identity as something separate from whatever else is going on in the material realm. We're actually able to perceive ourselves as being something separate from even this body. And Prabhupada makes that point that we don't say I hand, we say my hand. That indicates that we're something separate from the body. And when we're chanting Hare Krishna, we experience that identity. Pratyak savagamam damyam susukam kartam avyayam. In the Bhagavad Gita, it's described as the perfection of religion because it gives direct perception of the self. And we experience that when we chant Hare Krishna. And we exhibit it also when we chant Hare Krishna, especially in the kirtan. Then what happens? We start behaving like madmen. Right? You know, jumping up and down, doing things that we wouldn't ordinarily do. Right? These are the symptoms. The symptoms of ecstasy are manifest in the character and the behavior of the devotees. And so we realize that we're not this body. We realize that we're spiritual by nature. And this is the message of the Bhagavatam and more, but to start with, you're not the body. You're at the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. And the Bhagavatam teaches us in this section how the devotees deal with challenges. Very often, Bhagavatam is based on this point or these points. How do we deal with life in the material world when we're actually spiritual by nature? We're never going to be happy in the material world, but if we follow the process as recommended by the Bhagavatam, then we can be happy wherever we are and spiritually advanced, even we're not very elevated persons by, you know, birth. Or at least speaking from my own experience. Yet, follow the Bhagavatam, follow the chanting of Hare Krishna, follow the practice of bhakti as recommended by Prabhupada, then one's mind and senses are all fully engaged and then we experience our self, right? We realize who we are, what we're supposed to be doing. We become very focused. So even though the Bhagavatam challenges us with information that's beyond our experience, right? The devotees have faith. They accept what's being said in the Bhagavatam and they follow what's being explained and get the results, the realization, and also manifest the qualities. The qualities of goodness are manifest in the character of the devotees. And so even if the Bhagavatam appears to be pretty far out. Is that the right? Is that okay to say that? It's a bit from a materialistic perspective. That's not a problem. That's not an issue, because the practices that are recommended by the Bhagavatam produce results that are undeniable, and are thoroughly experienced by the devotees once purified by practice of bhakti. And so their faith is become so much more becomes very strong and powerful. The mind and the senses are controlled. The consciousness is purified. One's able to experience oneself separate from all of all the material things, and that confirms what the practice of bhakti confirms, the information. And so even if the materialists say, you know, you're crazy, Prabhupada said, who's crazy? Huh? You're dependent on your mind and senses, which will fail you all of the time, right? Who succeeded in the material world trying to satisfy the mind and the senses? Practically speaking, no one. Yet, when one follows the process of bhakti, then all good qualities are manifest in that devotee's character. And they're not concerned about material things. Well, put it this way, the material things are not their prime motivation. We have to take care of the body, obviously. But we do that understanding this is a spiritual requirement, not necessarily a material requirement. It supports our spiritual practice. So we accept, like Prabhupada says here, Vyasaki. Vyasaki is Sukadeva Goswami. Whatever he says, we consider to be factual. This is the end of the purport. That is perfect knowledge. Okay. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Give the man a microphone so we can hear him. so our audience can hear you.
Hare Krishna. You were explaining about the four types of knowledge, and in the difference between the third and the fourth, you said one was worship of Vishnu and the other one was worship of Krishna.
Yeah.
But you also qualified it saying by the mood of worship of the devotees.
Yeah.
Would that be applicable to devotees who worship Krishna as well in a mood of just taking?
What was that?
Would it be same? Let's say, for example, if I'm worshipping Krishna, and then I'm not worshipping selflessly, but I'm just...
It's okay.
Is that still considered to be in the fourth level of knowledge, or...?
It'd be the third, but it may be approaching the fourth in that... in the Bhagavatam says, akama savakamo va moksha kama udaradi. Even if you have material desires, right? If tivrena bhakti jogena, if we focus on, again, serving the spiritual master, right, and following the process that's been given to us, then one will gradually elevate oneself to the point of pure devotion, right? So, hands up all those who are pure devotees. Please raise your hands. Okay. All very humble souls. This may be a giveaway. So, you know, Prabhupada was asked, how many pure devotees are there on the planet? Right? And Prabhupada said, how many members of ISKCON are there? Interestingly enough, right? So we honour and respect anybody who chants Hare Krishna, right? And especially we honour and respect anybody who's taken initiation, because, what is it? Tikshasti chet pranati bis pajantam isham. We offer our pranams to anybody who chants, right? But we bow down, offer obeisances to those who tikshasti chet pranati bis, right? So those devotees who are initiated are on the path of perfection. They surrender effectively, right? Ideally, they're surrendering to the Guru and ultimately to Krishna. Like I read yesterday, Prabhupada says, one shouldn't spend a penny on anything but transcendental loving service to Krishna. Huh? So how many of us here are only spending all of their money on transcendental loving service to Krishna? Please raise your hands. So you know, from one perspective we could say not a pure devotee, right? But for those who are following the sadhana practice, Prabhupada said we'll respect those devotees as being pure devotees because they're on the path of perfection. And as we follow the chanting 16 rounds, following the principles, and especially if we preach. This is important. We have to work cooperatively, and that's our yoga practice, would you believe? You know, we like to think of yoga practice as sitting in the Himalayas under a sacred spot. In the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita explains what a yogi does to control the mind. And that's kind of like the traditional notion of a yogi, right? But the interesting thing is, for us as members of ISKCON, our yoga practice is in the morning, chant Hare Krishna, study the Bhagavatam, worship the deity, offer bhoga, so we've got prasadam to distribute, and Harinam, book distribution, prasadam distribution, to benefit others. Right? This is really, and this is epitomized by Haridas Thakur as an example. And also, who else? In Chaitanya Leela, who's the epitome of this yoga? Lord Nityananda. Yeah, Lord Nityananda. Advaita Acharya. Srivas. And Ramananda Roy. Yeah, so these devotees, well, especially Haridas Thakur and Lord Nityananda, right? There's that really nice pastime where all of the devotees are coming to Jagannath Puri, and Lord Chaitanya's asking Haridas Thakur, what are we going to do about all the conditioned souls? How are we going, you know, his concern was for the fallen, right? And Haridas Thakur said, well, we'll chant Hare Krishna. And even the trees, because Lord Chaitanya was, what about the non-moving living entities? They're so bound up in the reactions of their karma. What can they do? And Haridas Thakur said, the echo of the Harinam will be their kirtan. And they'll get benefit from just echoing the sound vibration of the Sangatan party. Right? So Lord Chaitanya said to Lord Nityananda, he said, I think next year you shouldn't come to Jagannath Puri. And you know, that would have been like, you know, death blow for the devotees. But what was Lord Chaitanya's concern? His concern was for the conditioned souls, right? For benefiting others. So that's the mood of a devotee is, let me know, I'm not here to benefit myself, I'm here to serve. And that service is to give the holy name, is to give books, is to give prasadam to those who don't get an opportunity for that benediction. Right? So that's our practice in many respects. That's our yoga practice. Get up in the morning, chant, you know, do our sadhana, but then some part of the day or the week, preach. That's our culture. Right? That's our yoga practice. And then, you know, the neighbours think, oh, you're just making money. Huh? Selling books. Having weddings. You're only doing weddings to make money. Well, whereas, you know, that's a spiritual practice. Very interesting. Prabhupada, after he initiated the devotees, then what did he introduce? Marriage. Is marriage important? Okay, how many of you are married? Please raise your hands. Yeah. How many are thinking about getting married? Raise your hands. The Brahmacharya is not going to put their hands up. But in a truthful moment, they would be honest, right? It's so much part of society. Huh? Yes, we have brahmacharis, we have renunciates, and society must have those. But look at you know, and that was the ISKCON that I joined, that Maharaj and I joined. But now what's the ISKCON like when you join? It's all householders. Huh? And Lord Chaitanya encouraged those devotees. He encouraged them. Do sankirtan. Preach. If the householders were having a family, he was into it. What's the name of your child? You know, they're having the kirtan in Srivasa's house and Srivasa's son died. And Srivasa didn't want to tell Lord Chaitanya, didn't want to tell anybody, didn't want to bring the kirtan down. Didn't want to bring the mood of the sankirtan down, right? But then when Lord Chaitanya, he said, something's happened here. Something's not quite right. What's happened? And Srivasa said, my son has died. And Lord Chaitanya was upset, naturally. But Srivasa was, he said, you know, I'm happy my son's died while the kirtan's going. Very interesting. Very detached. Huh? So, yes, we have material desires. We can't ignore them, right? So that's why we get married, we get jobs, we do all the things that we do, right? Otherwise, it would just be show bottle, right? If I said to all of you, okay, now you have to shave up and move into the brahmachari ashram, right? How many of you are going to do that? Although that was our preaching in the 70s. Huh? Acincharupa and I were going to the temple and we'd been chanting 16 rounds for about 6 weeks. And the brahmacharis were trying to get us to move into the temple, which would have meant, you know, I was in the I was in the brahmachari ashram and Chinchurupa was in the brahmacharini ashram. That was the focus in those days because we needed people. We still do need people. So if you are thinking about renunciation, you can have a chat with me afterwards. But it's a gradual process. It's a gradual process, right? And so, very interesting, Prabhupada, especially in the early days, would say dovetail, right? Dovetail, because we know that if we try to be renunciates artificially, the natural propensity for engagement in sensual activity, it'll happen, right? Because you can't just get rid of it. Some people, yes, but most of us, not. A gradual process. And that's why Prabhupada encouraged Varnashram, Dharma, and why Prabhupada says the kings and the rulers of society are meant to institute Varna and Ashram, because that's a stable environment where we can chant and, you know, practice bhakti effectively. Right? So it's okay to chant Hare Krishna even if we're not fully Sava Dharmam Paritaja Mamikam Sharanam Braja. Is that okay? Yeah. So you're okay. Whereas in the 70s, you wouldn't be okay. You'd be a hog, dog, camel and ass. Or maybe a little elevated, more elevated than that, but still just a householder. Huh? A fallen householder. Which is okay, we're all fallen. You're in good company. We're in good company. Yeah. Anything else? How's it going, Abhay? Okay. Your mridanga player is quite good now. Yeah. Okay. Gwantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Bhakta Brinda ki jai.